This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you, Randall. Good morning.
Good morning.
Randall filling in today. David had a family matter he had to address, so we'll have David back with us next week, but happy to have Randy Prangy sitting in for us today. We got a nice show lined up for you. Going to talk with Hillsborough baseball coach Kyle McBrain here momentarily. They're set to take on Porta coming up this morning at 10 o'clock. We're also going to talk some girls soccer with Carthenville head coach Tim Johnson, and we'll catch up with new Nokomis baseball coach Donovan Riley, all for you here this morning on Sports Saturday. What a beautiful day. Obviously, Derby Day, of course, Kentucky Derby. And as far as the weather goes for baseball and softball, doesn't get much better. And hopefully there'll be some crops that go in the ground today if it's dry enough. There was a lot of rain that pushed through over the last few days, but I'm sure there's some pockets out there where maybe some field work can get done. And hard to believe that it's already May. April just flew by here, and here we are in May. And a couple of months left in this baseball and softball season. The regular season will roll all the way through May into the early part of June, and then we'll get into the postseason. Remember, there'll be a full postseason for baseball and softball this year after they got nothing a year ago. So that will come up in the middle part of June. And, you know, the senioritis factor is always an issue when it comes to baseball and softball in the spring. School is out for the last part of the season. This year, school is going to be out for a majority of the season, but no one's going to mind one bit because we're playing ball. And happy to be joined on the phone right now by the head coach of the Hillsborough Hilltoppers, Kyle McBrain. And Kyle, good to talk to you, buddy. How you doing?
Hey, good to talk to you guys. How's everybody doing?
Hey, we're doing fantastic. And last time we talked on this show, it was a year ago. And at the beginning of the pandemic, you had changed jobs. You were looking for a new house. So you have gotten yourself settled in now. How does it feel to be back at your alma mater?
Hey, it's awesome. You know, having our whole family back in our hometown, it's just been great so far.
And, I mean, is that one of those things, Kyle? Is it even better than you thought it might be? Because I know you were very happy at Staunton. You were doing great things over there in a variety of different programs. But like Aaron Duff with the football, when you have a chance to come home, that is just special.
Yeah, it was kind of the right timing, and you know, we have two young kids that we want to have raised in Hillsborough. So, I mean, it just worked out perfect, and I love my time in Staunton, still love everybody over there. It was just one of those things that was best for our family and best for me as well.
Topper baseball always has such a solid tradition, and you've got a nice group of just overall talented athletes with you this year.
Yeah, we really do. We're kind of trying to figure everything out kind of as we go with the crossover from sports. But you know, I'm just really happy that that the kids have gotten the opportunity to play all their sports, and you know, we'll figure it out as we go, just like everybody else is right now. But you know, I'm really, really excited about what we have. It's just kind of trying to find the right pieces and figure out our pitching staff, and it's going to be a process, but it's fun.
You know, there was a lot of talk about the football in the spring and how they didn't have their normal lead up in the summer like they would for a traditional fall season. Baseball, very similar here. Talk about getting your arms ready, game ready. As you just alluded to, football just got over.
Yeah, we actually, the first practice started pretty early, but you know, we didn't have our soccer guys for the first 2 weeks, and then we just got our football guys back last Friday. So We literally had eight guys out at practice every day. So those guys were getting a lot of reps. But, you know, I think four of them were JV players and four of them were varsity players. So that's kind of where we're at this point. I mean, we're holding guys down to 40, 50 pitches. And, you know, that might even be pushing it a little bit. So we're kind of, like I said, we're trying to learn about our team and try to build up our pitchers. And hopefully by regional time, we kind of hit our stride.
And, you know, that's the great thing about this year. We get to talk about postseason baseball after the mess that was last year. How exciting is it for the kids that they've played a bunch of sports now with no postseason to know, hey, we get a playoff now?
Yeah, I think they're really chomping at the bit to be able to go out and compete in some sort of playoff scenario. You know, regular season and going after conference titles and stuff like that is great, but, you know, it's it's got to be frustrating to not have that big tournament at the end. So, like I said, I think we're excited, and that's kind of our goal for the year is get ready for that.
You know, I was happy to see Gavin Matouche making some contributions because I didn't know if we'd see Gavin on the field for a while after he had a fairly gruesome injury towards the end of the basketball season.
Yeah, when I watched that, I wasn't sure he'd be back either. And, you know, I kind of kept in contact with him, and he's like, I kind of feel a little better, And then he told me, well, I'm playing in soccer today. And I was like, wow, that's great news. So, yeah, we're definitely happy to have him out here.
Who are some of the other kids that are really going to be important cogs for the Toppers here moving forward?
Jace Teakin, senior. He's going to play some third for us and pitch a little bit. He's off to a great start at the plate, which is kind of incredible because, you know, we've had one. I think he was able to practice maybe once or twice before, so he just came out hitting. So he's obviously going to be huge. Dylan Smale, junior. He's going to play second base for us. He's maybe one of the hardest working kids I've ever been around. Great attitude. Will do whatever for the team. Drake Vogel is really talented kid playing shortstop for us. You know, I could kind of go on and on, but there's yeah. I think those guys are probably sitting at the top right now.
When you say Drake Vogel, a talented kid, that's exactly right. I think he could just pick up, just give him a random ball or a random sport that he's never seen, and he's going to figure it out, I have a feeling, in pretty short order.
Yeah, he's an athletic kid, and he's a competitor. We're kind of trying to keep a little bit of that, you know, under the belt, but he's a fiery kid, and we love it.
How's your schedule look? Did you try to just basically, for lack of a better term, jam as many games into this season as you could?
Yeah, I think once we get started, if we have a break with no rain, we're pretty much going to be playing every day. It's you know, with us, some guys were able to have some games during soccer and football just because they had enough guys, or maybe they were able to get some football guys out there. But like I said, with us only having eight guys, we kind of lost a week, so we're really going to be jamming. But like I said, it's just every time I start to get stressed out about, oh, we got to do this, I just keep thinking, you know, the kids get an opportunity to play, and overall, that's what it's all about.
No, that's exactly right. And do you feel that you have, because in high school baseball, it's all about how much pitching do I have if that scenario arises where we play every game we actually schedule?
Yeah, the good thing is when we had our sign-ups, nearly every kid said, yeah, I can pitch. I think right now at the varsity level and kind of going into conference, we're still trying to figure out who those top, you know, three or four guys are. But as far as arms go, we've got the quantity. We're just still trying to figure out, you know, the quality and mm-hmm. kind of get some work in that way.
You got Porta today. Is this a doubleheader or just one game?
We're just playing one game.
And I guess, like, you know, scouting in high school baseball, there's not really a whole lot of it going on. It's more about what are we doing, take care of ourselves, and the opponent will do the same.
Exactly, yeah. If teams keep their stuff on max preps, you can get on there and kind of see who their leading hitters, and if they don't keep their stuff on max preps, you kind of just go in. But, you know, like you said, it's not like we're scouting their defense or, you know, their offensive plan or anything like that. We're all trying to hit and get out. So,
see ball, hit ball, field ball, throw ball, right?
Yep. Seems simple, doesn't it?
It's not hard. I don't see what the problem is. Kyle, thank you for a few minutes of your time this morning, and best of luck today against the Porta Blue Jays.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right. That's Kyle McBrain, the head coach of the Hillsboro Hilltoppers, back at his alma mater. Yeah. Just see the ball and hit the ball. I don't see what the big issue is here. I mean, it's coming in, you see it, you hit it, and run the bases and score.
I would think that would work at any level of baseball.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, it's like the great Terry Tote line that he used to talk about from Star Trek. The more they overthink the plumbing, the easier it is to stop up the drain. And, boy, is it easy to get the drain stopped up in the game of baseball. Like, oh, my goodness.
You can overthink it.
Easily. We're going to get to a break here on Sports Saturday. On the other side, we're going to catch up with Carthenville girls soccer coach Tim Johnson when Sports Saturday rolls on.
And Sports Saturday continues on this Saturday morning. Once again, we join Tim Mize.
All right, Randy, thank you very much. Cardinal baseball for you this afternoon from Pittsburgh, 4:40 with the pregame on WQSMI AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9. Well, the girls' soccer season is underway, and we're happy to be joined right now by Carthenville soccer coach Tim Johnson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Hey, doing fantastic, and I just thought during the break, you know, I've been saying Carthenville girls soccer coach, but you're really just the Carthenville soccer coach because you just were with the boys, obviously, not that long ago, and you were co-South Central Conference champion. So before we get into the girls' season, let's look back a little bit about the boys' season, and boy, had to be really exciting to get that conference title.
Yeah, it was. That was one of our goals this year, and we did accomplish that. You know, we are aware, and we know that we were co-champions, and Gillespie-Litchfield Co-op and Hillsboro were up there with us, and they deserve that. And we're already making goals for next season to go ahead and take that outright.
And in a year where you knew there wasn't going to be postseason, I mean, that conference championship, it was maybe even a little bit bigger than a normal year.
Yeah, it was. The way we talked about it, you know, the way that sports are, there's so many good things about sports outside of trophies and winning and losing, but that is a part of it as well. And that was the only trophy we could win this year, the conference trophy. There was no kickoff classic tournament. There was no fall cup. There was no postseason. Just the conference. So, yeah, we did set our sights on that.
So when you now turn your sights to the girls' season, what was that transition like for you from the boys to the girls? Because normally you got a little gap. Not really this year.
No, an overlap. it was quick, and you know, you add in, it would have been, I think we'd be okay if we just transitioned straight into it. But, you know, the girls are busy. The way that their sports schedule had lined out, you know, stereotypical, you know, girl athletes would be playing your volleyball, your basketball, soccer, track, and those were all lined up back to back to back, and we're on the tail end here. So as quick as we wanted to get into it and get after it, we also have to be aware of trying to keep people healthy and not overtraining them and still letting them be kids.
Well, in soccer, too, I mean, it's such a continuous motion sport. For that to be the sport that's at the back end of this busy schedule, have you noticed that maybe the legs aren't quite the same as they usually are, or have you not really seen a difference there?
Yeah, we've noticed it, especially the dramatic change in weather here the past week has affected it as well. But, yeah, the legs get heavier quicker. And kind of what we've been doing, and I think we're about up to par here now that we're a couple weeks in. But, you know, we notice, we tell them on the sidelines during the game, we see that you're tired, but we're going to go ahead and use this game as a multi-purpose tool, and we're going to get in better shape during it as well, so we're going to leave them out there a little longer. But, yeah, I think they're getting back into shape now, getting back in the swing of things. You know, if you compare it to the boys' season, we do have more time, so it's not so much as an emergency to get going right away. We'd love to start in mid-season form, but the ultimate goal is to be at our best by the time postseason rolls around.
And these spring seasons, this is the first time where perhaps the year will feel normal because you don't have the – you've still got restrictions, but maybe not as many types of restrictions as we saw during the fall and winter seasons.
You're right. I mean, the number one thing that the spring sport athletes are getting is that postseason. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge step. It's a huge motivation factor. You know, you can take all your skills and showcase them and see how far you can go. Not to jump back to the boys, to the girls, boys season, to the girls season, but it was weird for the boys knowing when our last game was,
right,
and actually, you know, winning our last game of the season. How rare is that? Normally a state champion is the only one who finishes their season with a win. Now we get back into the girls, and with the postseason looking, you know, you're 5 weeks away, we only have about 2 more weeks before we have to start the process of seeding and things like that. So things are moving quick in some aspects. And in another aspect, we have time. we're kind of excited with the fact that we'll be out of school and we'll have plenty of, as much time as we want to train leading up into postseason. That's a difference factor there. We're going to have kids who have already walked across the podium to graduate who are still playing high school soccer and other high school sports. That's a different part, but, boy, is it exciting that they're able to play again.
It really is. And, you know, from a coach's perspective, sometimes I feel like when you have to get into the seating, it becomes just kind of a unwanted task. It's like, oh, I haven't seen these teams. How am I going to seed them? What am I going to do? But this year it's like, yeah, I'll seed anything you want me to seed. That's fine.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we're ready to play as many games as we can. We're ready to get into this conference season. And this next week is going to be a big identifying week for us, where we've got Staunton and Litchfield this week, and even future conference opponent North Mac this week. All three good teams. We're excited to get playing.
You know, when I think back to the last girls soccer season there was, you along with Litchfield were both in that sectional tournament. Talk to me just about kind of the strength of girls soccer in the South Central Conference.
It's strong. You know, you look at a lot of our conference schools, specifically their girls soccer teams, and you see a lot of their number one athletes on their soccer teams. So you may see that the star basketball player is also playing soccer. The star volleyball player is also playing soccer. And I think that multi-sport athlete kind of across all schools, it seems like, girls soccer is reaping the benefits of these multi-sporters, and our conference is solid, very sound. And I've got no issue saying, you know, Roxana, I think, is the top of the table there. They're a quality program, and then, you know, below them is probably everybody else. It's an even keel, high-quality, high-caliber conference.
And that really does make for just good competitive play when you have a bunch of really good teams just kind of mashed together.
Yeah. You know, iron sharpens iron. Mm-hmm. Play against good competition, you're going to get better. So we love to see that within our conference. We know every single game that we have conference-wise, we got to show up ready to play. There's no guaranteed gimmies or anything like that. And those are all good things when you're trying to develop, you know, perennial, lifelong quality soccer.
Talking with Tim Johnson, the soccer coach at Carthenville. And, Tim, I want to thank you on the air for what you did along with John Overticchio to get that boys soccer match on the radio a while back between Carthenville and the Gillespie-Litchfield co-op. That was so much fun. It was so cool to go out and watch those kids compete on that beautiful turf there at Carthenville. But just kind of talk about soccer, where you see it going here in the next few years. Because as I look at it as from the outside, as someone who doesn't, you know, soccer's not my main thing. But, man, I see the room for a lot of growth here. It seems like soccer's about ready to really take off in a major way.
I think so. You know, soccer has always been a very, very popular sport among our youth, mm-hmm. Down to, you know, 5 years to 12 years old. The rec soccer in our area is very strong. And the question is always brought up, how do we maintain the interest? How do we keep their interest so they move on to the next level? And that's just, I'm kind of getting off track here, but that's just one of the key factors of the growth. And then you add in the element that Travis Matthews, among many other people, have been involved in our local club, Impact FC, formerly MOMAC FC and FC South Central. Those club teams are for those families who want a little bit more than rec soccer. There's nothing wrong with rec soccer as long as they're playing sports. They're learning, they're getting better. But if they want to go a little bit deeper into the game of soccer, that's a great club for them to jump into. And then from there, you know, we've got St. Louis FC, the MLS pro team, coming to St. Louis here soon. I saw a picture last night where they've got seats starting to go up in the stadium, and that's not long away. And when you got a pro team playing that sport nearby, you're going to get kids' interest as well. So I agree with you. There's going to be a lot of growth. We're real excited about that.
Talk a little bit more about Travis Matthews. I mean, he's been doing this, gosh, about as long as I've been at WSMI. He's been on the soccer scene like you were just describing. And when you have one person who is willing to undertake that type of operation, you see the results of what can happen.
Yeah, you do see it. And, you know, the first thing that comes to mind when you talk about Travis, to me, he's extremely knowledgeable about the game, and he's completely humble about it. Mm-hmm. His purpose is to teach and to coach and to grow, young athletes into good human beings and into good soccer players. And he does a really, really good job at doing that, and doesn't really ask for many thanks, but he deserves a lot. Travis is involved in about every community, you know, in this South Central area, not just one. It goes across the board, and his coaching ability and his ability to teach other coaches and to work with the communities is just it's unmatched, and he deserves a lot of credit.
Tim Johnson, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time this morning, the Carletonville boys and girls soccer coach, and enjoy the rest of your ride here this year. And, hey, we get some playoff soccer, so that is a great thing.
That's right. Always enjoy it, Tim. I appreciate it.
All right, that is Tim Johnson here on WSMI Sports Saturday. As we look at the girls' soccer schedule for today, we were talking about Litchfield. They were in that sectional, of course, a couple years ago. Would have been, well, I guess, 2019 would have been the year. I think I've lost track of the, you know, when you skip the season like that. I think it was the 2019 postseason where it was at Litchfield. Either way, the last time there was postseason, Litchfield and Carletonville were both in that girls' sectional. Litchfield hosting Lincoln this morning at 10. Southwestern will host Civic Memorial. Taylorville is at Athens. Beardstown will be at Jacksonville. Then North Mac will host Riverton this morning at 11, with Glenwood entertaining Granite City at noon. In terms of the baseball games for today across the area, let me find my documentation. Here we go. Hillsboro's hosting Port. We mentioned that coming up top of the hour. Litchfield, they're hosting Springfield High in a doubleheader today at 10 o'clock. Connor White, the new head coach for Litchfield. And I don't know if it's considered his second year, because he was hired last year and would have coached, but there was no season. So we'll catch up with Connor White at some point here down the line, and we'll ask him, does he consider himself in his first year or his second year at the helm of the Litchfield Purple Panthers? Donovan Riley is in his first year as the head coach for Nokomis, and happy to have Donovan on the phone right now, the Nokomis head baseball coach. And Donovan, good morning, sir. Tim Mize here. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Hey, fantastic, and what a just great situation to have high school baseball back. What has been the mood of the team?
We're excited to be back. I think it's tough for the guys that were there last year. You know, we were going to be pretty good. But we're all excited to be back and young this year, so we're ready to get started.
You know, yeah, that team last year, that might be one of the great sad stories of seasons lost. That group, they had legitimate chances to make a very deep run into the state tournament, but of course we know what happened there. So for you, Donovan, now the first year as the head man, taking over a very successful program in Nokomis, I guess it's a balance of putting your own stamp on it but not trying to reinvent the wheel too much?
Yeah, definitely. And Coach Miller's helped me out there a bunch, you know, helping me step into Pisco's big shoes. But, you know, I'm excited to be able to see the next level of it and see how things are done here. And then, like you said, put my own twist to it and make the program mine as well.
I was talking with Hillsboro coach Kyle McBrain a few moments ago. We were just kind of joking about it's really an easy game. You know, you just see the ball, you hit the ball. The ball's hit to you, you field it, you throw the guy out. It's not that complicated.
You're exactly right. And believe it or not, I actually told my guys that the other day at practice. We were struggling on the defensive end. I said, you know, it's really easy. I said, see ball, field ball, throw ball.
Yeah. And, you know, like baseball, every sport is mental in its own way. But the game of baseball, it's a game of failure. It really is. And sometimes it is just really hard to get your mind into that frame. It's like, okay, I've made a couple outs or I made an error, but there's still another play to go.
Yeah, and that's something that I think Nokomis is great about, is that they stay so focused and they're always ready to make a play, and that's something we've really been harping on them a lot this year too, is staying focused throughout the entire game and make sure that, you know, what are we doing in between pitches? What are we going to do if that ball's hit to us? And that's something that I think's been beating their heads. I mean, until they were blue in the face. I mean, they're just already at that level. So that comes pretty natural to them.
And that, I mean, from a coaching perspective, it's nice when you have the feeling that I've got a high IQ club here.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, I couldn't ask for a better group of boys. And I mean, they're very coachable, and they understand what's going on, and they're all out there and they want to compete. So I love that about them.
If, you know, like Nokomis, obviously, you know, basketball school for decades under Kimbrough, and the baseball team's been there, but I've always just, like, Nokomis kids, they just look like baseball players to me. Always have.
Yeah, they've got some pretty good athletes running through there, and like I said, you know, they love to compete, and they love to go out and do the best they can do on the court or the diamond.
When it comes down to high school baseball, one of the big question marks for every team always is, how much pitching do I have? So when you look at the arms that you have available night in, night out, do you feel you're covered if a situation arises where you play every game in a week that's scheduled when there's no weather that comes through?
It would be pushing it, but we could piece it together. We're probably a little short-staffed than what we would normally be, but we've also got some really young arms, and we've got some guys that haven't really thrown much. So, you know, we could piece it together, but it'd be better if we had three or four games rather than all five.
Yeah. Talking with Donovan Riley here, the new Nokomis baseball coach. And obviously this year, with all the different sports and the overlap, when you got together, what was slower to come, the hitting eye or kind of the pitching getting into form?
I mean, all of it, really, when we're trying to battle soccer and football at the same time, you know, and we're practicing for an hour every day, and kids are leaving early to go to football practice or go to soccer practice and canceling games. So, I mean, really all of it. I mean, just trying to get in a groove and trying to get repetitive stuff done so, you know, we're not out there bobbling every three or four ground balls that are hit to us or dropping fly balls or swinging out of our shoes and lunging and everything. So, you know, I mean, I can't really say it was just one or the other. It's just the fact of us getting out there and made a big difference once those two sports finally got over and we're having full practices and guys are getting in a groove that, hey, it's baseball season and baseball only now.
Well, and that was, you know, the one good thing about the baseball and softball, really, and track and field and girls soccer as well, is everything was lost last year, but you're getting a basically full season this year, so that at least it's something. We'll never get back 2020, but at least the sports that got nothing last year get a full season this year.
Yeah, absolutely, and we're all just we're happy to be playing. You know, we can sit and complain about how everything was rushed together, but we're just happy to be playing.
And I mean, I would imagine that from the kids' perspective, sometimes, you know, you get into baseball and the senioritis can set in. It's like, oh, we're out of school. You know, we still got to play. Some kids are just indifferent. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. When school gets out, I think these kids are just going to be thrilled to be playing ball.
Well, and I don't think that's going to be an issue at Nokomis either. And, you know, like I said, they're ready to compete and they want to play regardless of when it is. They're a different breed.
Yeah. What does your schedule look like here in the short term? Some of your big games you got?
I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't looked deep in the schedule. We're taking it week by week right now, especially with soccer and football. But we got Morrisonville coming up next week, and we've got a rescheduled game with Bunker Hill Wednesday.
And I guess really, when you're a high school baseball coach, there's no sense in looking more than a week ahead because between the weather and other things, it might not happen anyway.
Yeah, exactly. We were supposed to play Edinburgh again this week and Metro East Lutheran Thursday, and both of those got rained out. So, you know, we take it one week at a time and game to game, day to day for practices.
And the Morrisonville-Lincolnwood co-op there, that of course, will be a nice rivalry game. So that'll be an intense affair.
Yeah, I think so. I think that'll be a real good competitive game. We went there last night for some JV innings, so we're excited to go back there for varsity next week.
You know, talk to me about the importance of the JV innings, because a lot of times, you know, you never know how many JV games or innings you're going to get to be played. But in terms of development for those kids to be able to get some game reps, huge.
Yeah, I think it's huge. One, to make sure that they stay interested and stay out, and two, for to get them some experience in the game so it makes them ready for the varsity level.
Sounds good. Donovan Riley, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time this morning, sir, and best of luck to Nokomis along the way.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, that's head Nokomis baseball coach Donovan Riley joining us here on WSMI Sports Saturday. And you heard Donovan allude to it, the big shoes of Brian Pisco to fill us. They have just a wonderful program established over there, and they will be a handful here because they still got the athletes coming now over at Nokomis. But you heard Donovan allude to it about the group last year that didn't get to finish off, and I kind of tongue-in-cheek throughout the year said it was like this year was a good year to be bad and a bad year to be good just because there's no playoffs and all the different things that were going into it. But last spring, Nokomis was going to be great at baseball. I mean, they were loaded. They had their basically entire team back, that special group of seniors. And for them to not get to go out and play at all their senior year, it's one of, if not the biggest, just sad tale from last year in terms of seasons lost, opportunities missed. I mean, when you've got a club like that to where you think we can legitimately get to state, maybe even compete for the whole dang thing, and then you don't even get to play at all. That will be a bitter pill in Nokomis for a long, long while for that group of kids. But for the current group, they're just happy to be out and playing, and it is real nice today, so it should be a banner day to get some ball in here across the WSMI listening area. Randall, it's also going to be a banner day down there in Kentucky. I still haven't checked the weather at Churchill Downs, but I have a feeling it's going to be nice and sunny. Probably not rainy.
Probably not rainy. So if you're going to bet the mutter,
you better
rethink it.
You better rethink the mutter scenario. I've got the odds here. Now, Essential Quality is the betting favorite. Okay, that's 2-1. Rock Your World is 5-1. Known Agenda is 6-1. Hot Rod Charlie is 8-1. Highly Motivated is 10-1. So, you know, if you're looking to actually win, I guess, you know, you bet on those boring favorites. Yeah. Where's the fun in that? Let's stick to the good stuff.
Yeah.
50-1. Like the King. Brooklyn Strong. Keep Me in Mind. Sainthood. Helium. And Hidden Stash. All currently 50-1.
Keep Me in Mind.
Keep Me in Mind.
Yes, I like that one.
You can just hear the track and answer. Keep Me in Mind, coming around the turn.
Boy, is it head down the stretch.
That old, the track announcer that used to just talk about, and down the stretch. I used to love that as a kid.
That was fun.
Round in the final bend and hear that. It's like, oh, man. So the Kentucky Derby today, the 147th running. I've never been to Churchill Downs.
I've never been anywhere close to it, really.
But, man, the people, I mean, who have been there, just rave about it.
It's a party.
It's a party, and they say you can't even really appreciate how big that place is until you actually see it.
It'll hold like 110,000, 115,000 people, won't it?
Massive. And then, you know, you get everybody on the infield and just...
Yeah. Yeah.
They talk about, what is it, the Florida-Georgia football game is like the world's largest, like, outdoor cocktail party?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The Derby might have that beat.
Yeah. I mean, they would have mint juleps there by the truckload.
Never had a mint julep either.
And I never have either.
I don't know if they're good or not. Sometimes the traditional things with big events like that aren't necessarily that good, but it's good because you're having it at the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, and with all of your friends and family.
Like, is anybody sitting down, like, on a random Thursday? And I want to mix me up a mint julep.
Oh, I imagine some people do.
I wonder.
I don't know. I don't know what goes in one.
Mint and julep, Randy.
What's julep?
I don't know. Beats me.
Anything like Crown or
I know
it ain't Stag.
I was going to say, I don't think it's Stag, Randall. I don't think it's Stag. I thought of you the other day. Was down in Highland. We were picking up some beef from Cordy's. But there's a big old painting mural on the side of a bar down there. It's got a big old guy holding like a big like glass of Stag drinking it. It says, not for lightweights.
That's right. There it ain't for beginners.
That's right. That's what it was. Ain't for beginners. That's exactly what it said. I thought of you.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
Oh,
Let's see.
Welcome.
We got to see if I can find a mint julep. Let's see. The mint julep is a bourbon cocktail best known for being the signature drink of the Kentucky Derby.
Bourbon cocktail. There you go.
Bourbon cocktail. So it's bourbon and, I don't know, I guess they put mint leaves in it.
It's bourbon and bourbon.
8 mint leaves, 1/4 ounce simple syrup, 2 ounces of bourbon, garnish of a mint sprig, or Angosta bitters, optional.
Optional.
Bitters are optional. Yeah.
There you go. I was looking up Philly cheesesteaks the other day.
Oh, my.
And the actual Philly cheesesteak, like an authentic Philly cheesesteak, uh-huh. You know, there's several different options as preference.
Sure. Oh, yeah. There's
but Cheese Whiz is one of the three authentic types of cheeses.
Cheese Whiz?
Cheese Whiz. Yeah. That Cheese Whiz.
I picture that.
Yeah.
I picture some kind of a white cheese.
Provolone was an option.
Provolone, yeah.
And then American cheese was the
American,
other.
American,
but
yes.
Those were the only three for an authentic Philly cheesesteak.
Or Cheese Whiz?
Cheese Whiz. Yeah.
That don't sound right somehow, but I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, Cheese Whiz. I always liked Cheese Whiz.
And
cheese in a can. Yeah. How could it go wrong?
Yeah, well... I guess not.
You get a Ritz cracker and put a bunch of Cheese Whiz on it?
There you go. There you go.
But I think I'm going to have to try a Philly cheesesteak with Cheese Whiz.
I don't know what harm it would do.
I don't think it'd do any harm.
I don't think so either.
Tastes delicious.
Yeah. Well, you have a mint julep to go with it?
Why not? Wash it down. We need to get to a break here on Sports Saturday. We're back with more in a moment.
9:46 on this Saturday morning. The Sports Saturday show continues, and once again, Tim Mize.
All right, Randall, thank you very much. And Cardinal baseball for you today, 4:40 with the pregame on WQSMI AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9. And it was good to see Genesis Cabrera get back on the mound last night. He pitched 2 scoreless innings, and that was, of course, his first appearance since he hit Bryce Harper in the face with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. And then his very next pitch found the ribs of Didi Gregorius at about 96. And we were talking earlier, you know, about baseball being such a mental game. And you never know how a player, even a professional athlete, will respond to a scenario like that. I mean, we've seen, you know, professional baseball players get the yips. I remember Chuck Knobloch couldn't throw the ball to first base from second base. Mark Wohlers, the Braves closer back in the 90s, he was dominant, and one day he just lost it. It was gone. He couldn't get anywhere near the strike zone. So I was really curious to see how Cabrera would react after that situation.
Rick Ankiel comes to mind there, too.
Rick Ankiel, perfect. The best example of all. I remember watching that game in college thinking, what happened?
Yeah.
Well, you know what happened. Mike Matheny, his inability to put a knife back in its sheath properly, that was the deal. He had a birthday present, a knife, like a hunting knife or something. And when he went to sheath it, it either went through the sheath or he missed, and he sliced his finger terribly, all sorts of stitches. So he wasn't there. He had been catching Rick Ankiel all year, and it was Carlos Hernandez, I think, might have been the backup catcher. But there were a few balls that got to the back screen that Matheny would have got, that Hernandez did not get. And you know how it goes with the mental aspect, Randall. All of a sudden, I've thrown 4 wild pitches. Even if maybe 2 or 3 of them shouldn't have been, they still went to the backstop, and it was the rest is unfortunate history for Rick Ankiel.
Yeah, well, not exactly, because he came back.
Worked out okay for him, I guess.
Yeah, it worked out okay for him. Not as a pitcher.
That's right.
But he is what I would call an athlete, because he can play most any position on the field, just about.
Yeah, no, that's exactly
right.
Well,
in his prime, of course.
Right, in his prime. But so to see Cabrera bounce back and pitch effectively, I mean, obviously it was huge for all involved. But that situation the other night was as terrifying as you're going to see on a baseball field. Like, you know, the line drive back at the pitcher is always terrifying and nasty. This, at least to me, it made my toes curl even more than that. Because, I mean, it was just right in the face. And he didn't really get out of the way, you know. He kind of, well, froze a little bit because, quite frankly, he's like, wait, that's coming right in my face.
Yeah.
And, it
takes a little bit to process it, and it don't take no time to get there.
That's right. The dude bounced right back up, though.
Yeah.
Like nothing happened.
Yeah.
And he's, after the game, he's on the social media saying he's fine. Talking about, I took 97 to the face, sweet.
Just another day at the office.
Oh, man, different animal, Bryce Harper. But I, they were saying on the broadcast yesterday, I guess, Bryce Harper went a long way to defusing that whole situation. I guess he actually reached out to Cabrera at some point, maybe not right after the game, but in short order, and said, I know you didn't do it on purpose.
Yeah. Well, they know, when they're plunked on purpose, they know it.
They know it. Like,
yes.
Nolan Arenado got plunked on purpose in the finale of that Philly series, and he knew it.
Yeah.
Like, you knew it was coming.
Yeah.
That's how baseball, that's how it polices itself. You talk about the policing of the game, that's it, yes, right there. That's like, of course it wasn't on purpose.
The players take care of it.
That's right. Of course he didn't do it on purpose.
Yes.
But you still hit the Phillies' best player in the face.
Right.
So the Cardinals' best player is going to wear one. But the Phillies did it in the professional manner, right in the arm.
Yeah.
And Arenado's reaction was perfect. He wore it and went down to first.
Went down to first and let's play ball.
Yeah, and then Mike Schilt thought, wait a minute, I guess I got to get tossed out of this game here. So he did. You see, that was...
I think his beef was there was no warning after that.
That's right.
And even though he probably knew in the back of his mind why it happened.
Yeah, he... 100%, but he had to go out and protect his guys.
Yes,
but
yes.
That gets to the kind of the problem that the umpires now have when they interject themselves into these situations. Like, they issued a warning after Cabrera had thrown two pitches, hit a guy in the face, and hit a guy in the ribs. They issue a warning. If you're the Phillies, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, don't issue a warning there. Let the game police itself. Let the Phillies go out, do whatever they're going to do, then issue the warning. So you issue the warning there when everybody in the world knows it wasn't on purpose.
Right.
And then the next day, when everybody in the world knows that it's on purpose, you don't issue the warning.
Yeah.
Like, it's completely backwards. Like, the Phillies wouldn't have batted an eye, I don't suspect, if warnings would have been issued.
Yeah. I mean, the first time.
The second time. Like,
The second time.
Like,
yeah.
The last game when they weren't issued. If the umpires would have warned both teams, if those were like, yeah, okay.
Okay, fine.
Fine.
That's the way of
it. But you don't. I can't blame Joe Girardi at all for being hot about the warnings being issued. We saw David Bell, the Reds manager, get tossed out like the week before in St. Louis. Similar situation when that ball got away from Jack Flaherty.
Mm-hmm.
They issued warnings, and he's like, "Wait a minute!" And you see that across baseball, though, Randy. And it's one of the reasons that the game doesn't police itself like it used to. And the umpires probably are told by Major League Baseball, "This is how you have to do it."
Well, because I think what they're emphasizing more than anything, they don't want to see guys get hurt.
Well, that's right.
And years ago, too bad. That's part of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
usually, well, how many times did guys get hit with and have to leave the game for any length of time in the quote-unquote old days?
Yeah. Well, I don't really know.
I don't know either.
I wasn't around.
I was, but really wasn't paying that close of attention.
But it's any time it gets above the shoulder. And, you know, Tony La Russa, he was, and I guess is, as old school gets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody in baseball knows, like back in the day, if you hit Albert, two of your guys are getting hit.
Yeah.
But it was always belt or below. Always belt or below. Like, any time a pitch got up, he was hot. Even if one of his guys threw it. Like, I can't even imagine what Tony La Russa's reaction would have been to Genesis Cabrera if he was managing the Cardinals when that happened.
That would have been interesting.
There was no three-batter minimum back in the day. And Schilt said he would have taken Cabrera out after the Harper incident if he could have. But that was...
Some of these rules that they've come up with, I don't know.
Well, Randy, we have beat this into the ground.
Yeah, true.
But it's
true.
So simple, I don't understand why all these people in Major League Baseball just don't accept the fact. To speed up the game, you don't need to put a runner on second base in the 10th inning. You don't need to limit the number of mound visits or make sure they're not stepping out of the box in between pitches. There's one simple solution to all of it. Call strikes, strikes. Like, if you watch a game on TV, there's at least, on a nightly basis, 5 or 6 pitches that are in that little box that are called balls.
I would say more than that.
Oh, and John Rooney, he's just classic. Right down the middle, knee high, ball one.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
And then they wonder why the game takes 3.5 hours.
Yes. It's like you said, we literally have beat this in the death for years here.
It's all you have to do.
It's very simple.
The hitters will adjust. You know, if you start calling a strike, maybe every batter doesn't go to a 3-2 count.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other part of the what's made the game so slow is everything's a 3-2 count. It's either a walk or a home run. There's no movement and motion. You widen that strike zone, the hitters are going to figure it out. They're not going to wait around for three balls and two strikes.
Right. Right, because they get paid to hit, they want to hit. And if you throw strikes, they'll swing at it.
Yeah, just got to call the strikes the strikes.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, right, the current group of baseball players, they're so conditioned to the small strike zone.
Exactly.
Now, whenever they do start to expand it, they're going to have a lot of arguing.
Oh, yeah.
Although maybe that's when the robot umpires come in, you know, because they'll call a strike a strike.
They're talking about that, yeah.
I'm all for the robot umpire. I really am.
Yeah.
It's for balls and strikes.
Yeah.
Because the human eye... The ball, especially as hard as these guys throw now.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the average fastball? 95 miles an hour? The human eye can't really track that. Well, I mean, I guess it can, but very difficult.
It is difficult.
Very difficult.
That's why these big league hitters, it's just amazing how they do it.
Well, they're
they fail 7 out of 10 times, and they're still called a success.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing that gets talked about the least with hitting is just simple eyesight.
Yeah. Well, you know, what have we talked about earlier today? See the ball, hit the ball.
Yeah, exactly right. I think it was, if it was Barry Bonds or somebody else, but they would put balls, like different colored dots on baseballs, and then fire them out of a pitching machine at, you know, 100 miles an hour or whatever, and not swinging the goal, what color was that dot?
Yeah.
I think they're talking about Ted Williams could see the seams on the ball when it was coming in.
Yes. Yeah. Like, that's a gift.
That's what makes what Tommy Pham has done so remarkable, because he's like considered in some ways legally blind, because he has some sort of degenerative eye condition. It's really what held them back, I think, with the Cardinals for a long time.
Yeah,
but I mean, you think about that guy. He talks about how in games he'll have to go and adjust his contacts because he'll be standing out in center field. And he's like, I can't see anymore.
Wow.
And he's hitting in the big leagues.
Yeah, he's hitting in the big leagues. Well, that's another thing. Factor two with that is hand eye coordination.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can see the ball, but then you have to get the bat around in time to get enough wood on it to hit it somewhere.
That's the tricky part, isn't it?
That's the tricky part. That's a very tricky part. You know, we should probably also mention, we've been on his back a little bit over the past few days, Matt Carpenter.
I think he is the first player since, like, 1900 to hit pinch-hit three-run homers in back-to-back games.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly right. And this is his role. You know, he doesn't need to play every day and hit fifth. But if he's your ace up the sleeve as a pinch hitter, that's his value to this club. Not playing every day, you know, not getting a bunch of starts and 3 or 4 at-bats a game. That is how he can help this team.
I think so,
off
too.
Off the bench as a bat. And maybe he's finding his swing, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, they talked about that on the broadcast last night.
Like, I get tired of exit velocity because it's a bottom-line business. Either you do or you don't. You know, like a bloop hit is better than a rocket that gets caught. You know, because the hit's the hit, the out's the out.
Yes.
But Matt Carpenter has been smoking a lot of baseballs and didn't have a whole lot to show for it.
Yeah, like they say, it all looks the same in the box score.
Yeah, everything's a line drive in the box score.
Everything's a line drive in the box score.
That's exactly right. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, Matt Carpenter, you have to be happy for the dude.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
He has gotten a lot of heat over the past couple of years.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
You know, and rightfully so. When you're a big league ball player, it's a bottom line business, especially when you're making the money. But he had a comment that his first home run was in the glove of the Phillies outfielder and then bounced out and went over the wall. But he made the comment, if he would have caught that, I was going to retire. Now, whether he actually wasn't going to retire, but, you know, that just kind of goes to the amount of stress and pressure that he was feeling. Like,
and like what you just mentioned, he has been hitting the ball well and zero to show for it.
Zero to show for
it.
And that was always the part of the frustration with him, too, though, for me. It's like, how many times can you just do the same thing and expect a different result? Well, go the other way.
Yeah, exactly, because they always put that shift on for him, which they seemed like they put on for every other batter anymore.
Even right-handed batters.
Yeah.
They're shifting on guys making their major league debut. Well, you know, in 13U, he really was a strong pull hitter, so we better shade him over.
Yeah, when he was a sophomore at South Podunk State, here's what we did. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
It's about like that, though.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, so many numbers. In baseball, Major League Baseball, they don't just see the ball and hit the ball or field the ball and throw the ball. It is numbers all over the place. But you know how many times you see a guy where he's like, why is he playing there? And the ball's hit right to him.
Yeah.
Doesn't move a muscle.
Yeah. How many times do you see that? We're out of time.
Oh, that's it?
Afraid so.
All right.